Let's continue our look at the Proverbs of Solomon by turning to Proverbs chapter 11, verse number 22. And I remind you again, I think it would be a great idea to have a little notepad near wherever it is you're studying, so that if you hear a proverb that you think would be beneficial for you or somebody you know, you can jot down the reference and then put that on a memorization list. Because I really do think these proverbs are intended to be memorized for use when we come up against the issue that they're dealing with. They were originally intended for younger people, but I think it's good for all ages. Now, Proverb 11:22 is very gender specific, but it's part of this collection of a man writing to his son or sons. And so I think the principle is going to be available if you flip the genders as well. For those of you that might be moms talking to your daughters. Verse 22 says, "Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman without discretion." Now, of course, the Jewish people didn't think very highly of pigs. So the idea of decorating them up by putting a gold ring in its nose didn't change the fact that it was a pig. Well, discretion is something that every person ought to have. That is the ability to think before acting and to discern between the right choice and the wrong choice. The fact that you're beautiful, or if we want to flip the gender and say handsome, doesn't come into the issue here. If you are somebody that acts rashly, foolishly, it doesn't matter that you look good doing it. It's still bad choices. And so that's the point that Solomon wants to get across to his young men and young women, I believe. Verse 23. "The desire of the righteous ends only in good. The expectation of the wicked is wrath." And this is that long-term thing that we should keep in mind. Righteous people sometimes have bad things happen to them here on earth, even when they've done good things. But the ultimate end will be good. And for those that are doing the wrong things, they have nothing to expect for eternity except judgment if they keep on that path. Verse 24, "One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and only suffers want." So this is speaking to the need to be generous-hearted, to think about others, not just about yourself. And so we see this. Very often people will try to hold on to everything and not help anyone around them. And it just makes their life more miserable. And yet people that are really generous, that are always looking out to the needs of others, that kind of boomerangs back on them. Other people start taking care of them. Verse 25, "Whoever brings blessing will be enriched, and one who waters will himself be watered." And again, that's the same concept, is that when you do unto others as you would have them do unto you, that's exactly what will often happen, is they'll take care of you just like you took care of them. Verse 26, "The people curse him who holds back grain, but a blessing is on the head who sails, the head of him who sells it." Think about this being people who have control of resources that are needed for day-to-day living. And some people think that they can drive the price up by holding on to it and making people wait until they absolutely will pay any price. Well, God's going to curse people like that. God will pay them back for their self-centered behavior. Whereas a person who is thinking about other people needing things, they will maybe drop the price and make it more readily available. And that brings blessings from the people who really needed it. Verse 27, whoever diligently seeks good seeks favor, but evil comes to him who searches for it. When I come to this, I always think about the idea, you generally find what you're looking for. So if you're looking for good in other people, you can typically find good in them. And if you are looking for bad in people, you can usually find that as well. Same principle applies for trouble or goodness. You will find trouble if you go looking for it. So it's better to look for a good situation. Verse 28. Whoever trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like a green leaf. The idea of being self-supportive, not in a good way, but rather in a bad way, that you don't care what goes on with anybody else. You know you've got yours, and you keep adding to it. Well, that's very likely going to cave in on itself at some point in the future. It certainly will in eternity, but you can't, because you can't take it with you. We had an earlier proverb along that line that wealth does not save you from poor choices. Judgment is still coming for the rich if they've been involved in sinful behavior. So it's the righteous people that will do well in the long run. Verse 29, whoever troubles his own household will inherit the wind, and the fool will be a servant to the wise of heart. Stirring up trouble is never a good idea. Stirring the pot, you know, trying to get all people riled up. You're just going to bring problems upon yourself when you do that. And very often, and this is the case that Solomon's thinking about, those that cause that sort of trouble will end up in trouble themselves and will have to pay the price. In this time period, maybe end up becoming the servant of somebody that made better choices. Verse 30, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and whoever captures souls is wise. Tree of life, of course, was in the Garden of Eden. It was removed after the sin came into the world. It would be returned in paradise of the book of Revelation. But this is used here kind of as a metaphor that when you engage in righteous behavior here on earth, then you're headed to spend eternity in that place where the tree of life is going to be. And the idea of capturing souls, it's not going out and kidnapping people, mind you. This is trying to be kind and polite and helpful to other people. And by that, you capture their soul. You capture their positive attention and response. Always a good idea to cultivate good toward other people so that perhaps they will return good to you. Verse 31, if the righteous is repaid on earth, how much more the wicked and the sinner? This is actually quoted out of the Greek version here in 1 Peter 4:18 that is applied in this fashion, that everybody's going to come under judgment, often here on planet Earth. And the righteous are going to be judged in the sense that they will be evaluated by God and be repaid. Pretty much good for the good that they've done. So if God is evaluating the righteous people, you can be guaranteed he's also evaluating the wicked people, and they will get theirs in the end. So that's ultimately what Solomon's trying to get across and which Peter applies in his own passage. Chapter 12, whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but he who hates reproof is stupid. People who want to learn, who want to improve, are going to want constructive criticism made to themselves. And that's the mental thing that I was immediately thinking about. You can see this in the sports world, that when you've got people who are trying to improve their physical abilities, their coaches will be constantly telling them, no, that's not the right way. That's not the right procedure. Do this. Do it this way. And so they're constantly being corrected or disciplined. Well, that's what all of us need if we want to improve. And if you're not willing to have that sort of correction, then apparently you're not interested in improving. You're being, as it says here very bluntly, you're being stupid. You're not thinking in the long term. Verse 2. A good man obtains favor from he who is, but a man of evil devices he condemns. This concept that God is always looking out for the righteous and condemning or bringing judgment upon the unrighteous, that's an ongoing theme, not only in the book of Proverbs, but in many of the scriptures. Verse number 3, no one is established by wickedness, but the root of the righteous will never be moved. Now that's a long-term thing. The wicked people are not going to be standing in eternity in a good place, but the righteous will be. And so the lesson to be learned is you stick with God's way of doing things. You be righteous because you want the long-term impact from that. Verse 4, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who brings shame is like rottenness to his bones. Now again, it's a man who is writing this proverb, giving this proverb, typically to his young sons. So those of you that are moms, maybe you've got daughters, you can flip the idea here, the gender, and still be perfectly in line with the principle. Your spouse reflects upon you. And so if you've got a good spouse, that is going to make you look good. Same thing the other direction, though. If your spouse is causing trouble, being a pain to everyone, that is going to bring you grief and trouble. Now, what's the point? I think the point might be choose your spouse wisely. Make sure you get a good one in the first place, somebody that's committed to God, somebody that's committed to righteousness. And if they cease being that way, you need to find some assistance in dealing with that as a problem, because your spouse will always impact on you because you're a partnership. Verse number 5, the thoughts of the righteous are just or fair. The counsels of the wicked are deceitful or unfair. And the contrast there is pretty obvious. You always want to prefer to be righteous and fair. Verse 6, the words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, but the mouth of the upright delivers them. So bad people are out there preparing to do bad things to others. Righteous people don't do that, and they even try to intervene when they see it happening to other people. Verse 7, the wicked are overthrown and are no more, but the house of the righteous will stand. That's that long-term understanding there. The righteous will stand in eternity while the wicked are judged. Verse 8, a man is commended according to his good sense, but one of twisted mind is despised. Now, the good sense, twisted mind here, are contrasted against each other, and it's from a moral standpoint, from a God-centric standpoint, that those who have a God-like mind, they're the ones that are going to be commended, while those that oppose the thinking of God, they're going to come under judgment and be despised. Verse 9, better to be lowly and have a servant than to play the great man and lack bread. There are several that fall into this little category of pretending to be more prominent than you really are. And Solomon shows that this is a bad life choice. So in this case, he says, you would be so much better off to be not so famous, but actually have a good base of resources so that you can even have somebody working for you, than to pretend like you've got lots of money, lots of people working for you, and in reality, you are barely surviving on meager rations. You'd be much better off to be stable. Verse number 10. Whoever is righteous has regard for the life of his beast, but the mercy of the wicked is cruel. I have very often referenced the first part of this passage in regard to pet owners, people who enjoy companionship with their animals, because they do. They care about what's going on in their animal's life. And that's just part of being a righteous person. You remember that when God created Adam and Eve, he put them in charge of the planet and of all of the animals that are living on the planet. And they were supposed to care about them. So I am always suspicious of people who don't care about the lives of animals. There have been a couple of times that I've seen people try to harm animals, and I immediately disliked them as a person. I still cared for them. They needed salvation, obviously, but I didn't see them as a person that I could trust, and actually I saw them as a person that might be dangerous in a lot of respects to people, because only the righteous people care for the life of the beasts. Now, the mercy of the wicked is cruel. That's kind of an ironic statement. If a wicked person were to act in mercy, it'd still be bad. It'd still be cruel because they're just that far removed from caring about others. Verse 11, whoever works his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows worthless pursuits lacks sense. This falls into the category of the warnings against laziness. You've got to have a job and see to your own needs if you are physically capable of doing that. And the person who applies themselves to that job, they will have enough to get by on. And the people who are just going through life, not caring about anything but themselves, don't bother to get a job, try to live off of other people, well, they're not thinking ahead. They're not being responsible, and they will come under God's judgment. Verse 12, whoever is wicked covets the spoil of evildoers, but the root of the righteous bears fruit. We know that there is sometimes this frustration amongst righteous people when they see wicked people getting away with stuff and even seeming like they're getting ahead because of their actions. Don't do that. Don't be envious of the unrighteous gains of wicked people, because they will come under judgment eventually, and you don't want to participate in that. Just keep in mind that righteous people are planted by God, and they will bear righteous fruit at the right time for God. Verse number 13. An evil man is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous man escapes from trouble. This is one of the Proverbs that basically tells you, keep a check on your tongue. Keep a check on your mouth. Don't make promises that you can't necessarily keep. People who just blurt out stuff will often regret what they said. So think before you speak is what Solomon is effectively advising his children. Verse 14, from the fruit of his mouth a man is satisfied with good, and the work of a man's hands will come back to him. So just stay invested in whatever it is that you're supposed to work at, and it'll eventually pay off. It'll eventually bear fruit of some sort and benefit you. And this is particularly true about righteous behavior. When we do the things of God, God will cause those things to thrive. I think about Jesus' advice that we should seek first God's kingdom and all the righteousness that goes along with it. And all those other things that we might be concerned about, like what are we going to wear? What are we going to eat? What are we going to drink? Where are we going to live? How are we going to pay the bills? Those things will fall into place if you're taking care of God's business. Verse 15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice. Now, remember, a fool, a fool is not someone who knows nothing. A fool is someone who is not living by God's standards, who's not applying God's wisdom. Those sort of people tend to live by their own rules, their own standards. They don't believe in authority having any type of control over them. So they don't listen to anybody else. That's part of their problem, especially to God. But a wise person does. A wise person wants to know what other people think so that they can have a broader range of consideration before acting on something. Verse number 16. The vexation of a fool is known at once, but the prudent ignores an insult. We've got to keep control of our tempers. Foolish people, people that only think about themselves, don't live by the standards of God, the moment they feel that they're not getting their way or somebody's insulting them, they get mad. They get angry, and very often they want to get even. But wise people, prudent people, people who truly belong to the Lord, they can soak up some of those insults that people throw their way and realize that words by themselves are not going to hurt them. Verse 17, whoever speaks the truth gives honest evidence, but a false witness utters deceit. Just a basic proverb for making sure you always tell the truth, especially when other people's lives are impacted by your testimony, by your words. You got to speak the truth in love, as the New Testament advises. Verse 18, there is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. And you can see the contrast there. Some people just use their mouths, use their words to hurt people, to stab them. But righteous people try to use their words to help people out. And so the encouragement here is definitely be the wise person and help people out. Verse 19, truthful lips endure forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. Very often people tell lies for momentary reasons. Solomon says we should be truthful people because that is looking toward eternity. Verse 20, deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil, but those who plan peace have joy. You can see the contrast here as well, that some people are just looking out for themselves. They want to do what they want to do, and they will have no qualms about lying, deceiving in order to get their own way. But those who have got the bigger picture, who are looking out for other people, then they're going to plan ahead. trying to bring peace and resolution to each situation as much as is within us, and that's going to make righteous people happy. Verse 21, no ill befalls the righteous, but the wicked are filled with trouble. Now that's a rule of thumb, particularly during this covenant time when Israel's living by the standards, that righteous people were always going to be blessed in an environment like that, and wicked people were going to be called to account. Verse 22. Lying tongues are an abomination to he who is, but those who act faithfully are his delight. We've seen something very similar to this already once. Telling the truth in love is what God wants to see. Verse 23, a prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaim folly. This is that reserved mindset. Wise people, prudent people, don't just spew all their stuff all over the place. They hold on to it and give it out in bits and pieces as is needed. Foolish people just dump everything. They speak before they think. And they say things they have not considered. And that's never a wise choice. So be wise. And then finally, verse 24, this is we'll have to close today. The hand of the diligent will rule, while the slothful will be put to forced labor. So in Solomon's mind, it was hard workers that advanced, or should have advanced, in supervisory positions, while those that were lazy bums who were doing the minimum or even below the minimum, they were always going to have to be forced to work. And the encouragement, of course, to those reading this is, be diligent, not slothful.